I'm Lisa, your host, and welcome to my show, The Bipolar OG. I know, funny name, but believe me, I've definitely earned that title because I've had my diagnosis of bipolar 1 for 40 years, and for the past 10 years, psychotic features. I have PTSD, and I'm also a suicide survivor. But most importantly, I have had stability for the last 8 years, and to me, that's nothing short of a miracle. I found in my life that my greatest reward comes from being able to help others, and also to do my part in raising awareness, removing stigmas, and offering hope. This led me to becoming a certified peer support specialist. I keep it real, but with a positive outlook, always based on improving life and not dwelling in darkness. Bipolar disorder is a difficult illness that can lead to truly devastating consequences when left unmanaged. But I'm here to tell you it can be done. It took me so long, but it doesn't have to take you that long. So I hope that you learn some things from my hard-lived experience and you'll be on your way to happiness and balance. In today's show, I'm going to be conducting an interview with a very special person whom I adore. He's also my brother. And if you or someone you love has bipolar disorder, you're going to want to stick around because I think that by the end, you'll have a newfound hope that even those of us with the most severe form can rebuild our lives. I'd like to welcome my brother, Eric. Eric, would you like to say hello?
Hello, Lisa. So we are going to go down a few memory lanes this morning. And if I'm completely open to share, I'd like to set the tone first of giving a little bit of background of our family. And that is that we had really almost like movie star parents. They were active, athletic, both athletes. The whole family was very athletic. And this is all prior to Lisa being born. So if you can understand this lovely, loving family, I would say upper middle class, and very loving in all sorts of levels of expressing one's love for each other. And then along the way came a little girl named Lisa when I was 16 and my brother being 14. So we really welcomed this new addition to the family. And then as life would have its twists and turns, my family decided to build a ranch up in a northern part of the state in Santa Barbara, and where instead of water skiing, surfing, scuba diving, and boating, we then moved everything into horses, which is where Lisa really came into being around horses, barns, a whole nother world. And it was magical. It was magical for my parents, because my brother and I at that point were away at college. And I would have to say that, you know, she was the gifted, loved child that came about later in life. And being raised with adults, I think that it gives a certain different kind of understanding of growing up quick. And that's what she did. And unfortunately, part of that journey is that that father died at 47. So it was very short-lived for her. Lisa did have to experience that death, firsthand. And a mother that was very stoic, very loving, but I don't think she was really prepared to raise a child by herself, only because of the dynamics of their marriage and their relationship. So I would have to say that at different intervals, it became I lovingly came in to help whenever I could help. And that's kind of the long version of what you just asked me. Hi.
Thank you, Eric, for giving our audience a wonderful overview of our family. It really was magical. My first question for you is, you know, after Dad's passing, you know, I was 10 when he passed, and Mom was raising me on her own, doing a great job. I was very involved with horses. Can you kind of share with our viewers how my behavior was? Let's go from like 11, 12 to about 15, and just give an idea of what I was like, just some bullet points.
Well, I, you know, again, I had a thriving business with 50 employees down in Los Angeles. So for me, I would see you on weekends that I was up at the ranch. And I saw, you know, a mother doing the best that she could do to manage a young girl who was full of energy and always in the barnyard, as was our mother. And that was really the focus of the horses, keeping you busy, keeping herself busy. She had experienced a great deal of sadness after our father died. And I think that, you know, you certainly probably carried that trauma with you, not only seeing visually, but experiencing the death and then being on that same ranch. So it was, I think, a trying time. I think you were having challenges at school, but we kept busy on weekends, having fun, doing different things. And so that's what I recall. But up until 16, and at 16, I think things changed in a number of ways.
Yes, thank you. You're exactly right. And it was actually, you know, I did some pretty crazy stuff. Like, there was a lot of early warning signs early on. And because I was a fireball and still am, and a daredevil, I've always been fearless and just like a daredevil. And I did some antics that didn't get me into any trouble, but they were antics. And like during my teens and when, you know, little parties and stuff, can you share your thoughts about some stories that you noticed that made me different, or just, you know, your thoughts in general?
So I'd like to just give a little insight into my sister. And that was, I think, from really 11 to 16, she was a fireball in terms of energetic with the horses. And I think, not looking back on it, that she might have had some difficulties with always in school and always trying to focus, not keeping a focus. So I think that was was going to become a problem for her. And only seeing it at different times and realizing that it could become a problem, I just really thought that she would grow out of it.
All right. Well, my next question would be this. During my high school years and, you know, as I was approaching 16 and then 16, I was wild and, you know, doing the typical teenage stuff. Well, maybe not typical for everyone, but, you know, parties, drinking. I did a lot of hosting parties, and I think you probably have a few stories to share about that, don't you?
I do.
Well, please. Well, share.
I would like to just say that because of having a single parent, that she really had the ability to have whatever she wanted it to be. It was a big house, and she could have as many friends, and she did. And a little out of control as a young teenager with no boundaries, really. And I think that was a little bit scary for all of us because she always took it to excess and in anything she did. And yet her balance was the horses. So I do think that that was, you know, a very stable point for her. But I also know that the other side of it is, I know that I'm not sure if it falls in this time period, but I remember I had a new BMW and she, you know, relentlessly, oh, let me take it. You know, I'll just go right to the party and I'll be back, you know, by 9:30. What? So I thought, well, sure, why not? This, remember, is a brand new BMW. When it came back at 11 o'clock, it looked like she had driven through a field. Actually, she had gone through a field. She went off the road. The car was pretty dirty, nothing dented. But from then on, I knew that she couldn't be trusted with a car of mine. So that would be one little tidbit that I would share of how out of control she was. And that's just one of many car stories I'll share. So how's that for answering a question, Lisa?
I think it's actually really funny because actually, you know, there was about six of us in that car that night. And we actually detailed the car. We all were like in on washing and cleaning it, but knowing how you are, Mr. Clean, and we evidently did not do the undercarriage, which was full of sagebrush. So yeah, it didn't work out so well. I got a scolding from you, but you were always forgiving of me, and I thank you for that. I know my other brother Greg has some crazy wild stories too. Maybe we'll get him on here, you know, for an interview and he could share. Okay, so moving forward, I think you were very accurate in describing me. I was definitely a rascal and pushed the limits. Now, my next question is this, and well, it's a statement and a question both. At 16, everything really changed and my moods changed and the intensity of me pushing the limits changed. And also it was at that time that I did something really devastating. And that is I attempted suicide and it, you know, it was the beginning of my, I attempted suicide by attempting to overdose. I had not thought about it the day before, but I did that day. I carried it out and was taken to the ER and my stomach was pumped and I was, you know, ordered a psych eval and mandatory therapy, which of course the whole family supported. You know, can you Also, here's another little tidbit that happened at 16. It was a busy year. At 16, you came out of the closet with your sexuality, and I had no idea. I had no reason to not like your sexuality, but I just never dreamt it. But at 16, you and I had a talk, and you told me that you were gay and you introduced me to your now of more than 40 year husband who I adore. And, you know, can you just tell me, just to snap back to the tragedy, can you kind of tell me the effect that suicide attempt had on the family, mom and you and Greg, and just what did you go through?
Well, let me just try and go back on memory lane here a little bit, because at the time it was a horrible situation. We've never had anything like that in our family. And it all of a sudden shook everyone up, and you definitely got everyone's attention. So I can recall one very major event, and it was during the middle of the week. So, you know, I had this big furniture factory. I came up and attended a psychologist meeting, really. And we were all given beanbag chairs, which I asked for a chair for our mother. We tried to open it up into why you would want to take your life with everything that you had, this beautiful. I always like to think of our family as, you know, when I was growing up, our mother was like a Doris Day type, blonde, beautiful, blue-eyed, just happy, driving a Lincoln. And then she sort of turned into a Barbara Stanwyck, very stoic, very just very strong, a very strong woman. And she is totally not understanding how her daughter, my sister, could take her life or want to end her life at such a young age with so much to look forward to. So I think it made a big, it really did challenge all of us. Greg and I were trying to do everything we could to not only support our mother, but also support our sister and trying to understand what's wrong. What's wrong? Why would you want to do this? So that is how I interpret that time period, Lisa.
Yeah, that's a really, it's an excellent, you know, thing. You know, it's awesome for me to hear, because even though, you know, we've talked over the years, it took a long time for me to come to the awareness of why I did what I did. And that fact being, I have bipolar 1. And that actual incident led to, and the psych eval led to, my early diagnosis with, they then called me manic depressive and ADHD. And no PTSD was entered into that, and no medicine either. And yet it was definitely, you know, a weird time. But during my, you know, 20s and, well, up to 30s and plus, I did well. Wouldn't you agree?
You seem to be managing everything well. I mean, I think I'd like to share a little bit. I won't mention any names, but because of this particular ranch, its location in the valley, and because you excelled so well at horses, you really gained a unique spot in the horse world of who you were associating with and who you were riding with. And I think that gave you another kind of focus, maybe away from your illness or even knowing it, because you were so busy all the time with these large horses, race horses, and riding them. And I really think that it was a happy time for you. And I think up until your 30s, it was your focus, was riding these horses. And you were fearless. You still are fearless, but fearless when you were, you know, still, you were a smaller person on a big horse. Now, even though you're 5'8", you know, you're still very much in control of a horse. But at that time, here's a young woman on a big racehorse, and you definitely managed and took charge. And that I always think is how I think of you in your 20s.
Well, yeah, thank you. That's, you know, that's how I feel. I feel like the horses, it's just my own personal opinion. I'm not trying to say this is a reason, but I really feel that the horses, which I've always, you know, even with my ADHD, I've always been able to maintain like laser focus. And I really believe that it just, I don't know, it just kept my, you know, having the bipolar at bay. And it wasn't until, you know, I was married, I got married, and my, you know, then husband did not participate in any drinking or any drugs or pills or anything of any kind. He was actually a doctor. And I didn't either. I was completely sober for over 13 years and doing well. And then everything changed. And that being a divorce that just that ruined me. I mean, ruined my ability to handle my illness, or it triggered and it came alive. And that's when everything turned to, you know, shit. So it was my late 30s and my 40s. That decade was horrifying. And that's an area I'd like you to share my attitude and what it led to within the family, my friends, my career.
Well, it was a lovely, lovely marriage, and as you had, you know, your child, and we're raising your child, and in a very, what I would call, high profile marriage, you were very active, and everything just seemed to be like the perfect situation. I will say that as it came as a surprise that the abrupt divorce, with being served papers, it completely disintegrated any shred of normalcy that you had had in that 10 or 11 years. And you went completely downhill. You actually went off the rails, if you will. And I think also moving back onto our mother's ranch, it was not a good situation, because you just were not in a great state by any means. And I think that was a very challenging, difficult period, and a very low period for all of us.
Yeah, it definitely was. And that it was during that period that I call the decade, where, you know, so many, you know, that's where my bipolar disorder was activated, and, you know, starting with depression, then mania, and, you know, it was activated. And originally I loved it. I did have a business, and yeah, you're totally right. Living on the ranch with mom, who, God bless her, she enabled me, and, you know, that was mom. And yet I did have a business, but I was going downhill really fast. My 40s, the terrible decade, I came unraveled. And I just did things that were so not me. I mean, I was like, there was good things, like writing a book when I was manic. There was really bad stuff. And there was mom, who, even though I was running a business, she, you know, she was so loving, supportive, and enabling. And I say that lovingly, even though it didn't help me. You know, I would never blame her ever, or any of you, because you all stuck by me. But I did some things that got me in serious trouble. And finally, literally, you know, I had lost friend by friend by friend. I lost my career. I lost all my family support, you know, or, well, you guys were at your thread. And then it got really ugly. And at that point I went into a psychosis from not treating and taking my illness seriously. And I did something that, though not, you know, dangerous to others, it was completely stupid. And it resulted in me, you know, being arrested. And yet, and it was during the time I was incarcerated that, you know, all of you guys had, you know, given up on me. I don't blame you. You know, I was in my 40s. You guys had stuck by me and my antics my whole life. So This, you know, is a part I really want to emphasize to others with bipolar disorder, and that is we can't help when we're in a manic or psychotic episode, unless we are treating, obviously, our illness, but we are often not aware of the impact that it does have on our loved ones and family. Would you mind sharing your thoughts on the impact it had on our family and our mother?
I can, and I will. And I have to say that because we had never really experienced anything or anyone incarcerated before, especially my sister, and to our mother, her daughter, it broke her heart. It truly did. She just didn't know what she had done wrong, and just not understanding any of this. Even our brother could not even quite understand it, as it's a very difficult time. And for us, it was also a time to have to start to not only pay more attention to you, but we had to start to isolate from you. And I think it was for our own well-being that, yes, we wanted to do what was best, but you had gone so far off the deep end that we had to take a restraining order so that you couldn't even be near our mother because it was just so toxic. So it was definitely a very hard, draining, unbelievably bad memory time for you and the family.
Yeah, I agree. It was an awakening for me. And this is where, you know, my story improves, because from that tragedy that sadly my family had to endure, that time that I was incarcerated, I was stabilized on medication and therapy, and I had not been stable for so long. And, you know, it was totally different for me when I got out, but I was on my own. You guys were tough love, and it was the best thing in the world, you know, for me. It was the only thing I believe that would have worked and that did work. And so, yeah, I completely turned my life around and, you know, mended all my relationships. It took a while. It didn't happen overnight. I have maintained for now 8 years, you know, constant stability, medication, you know, psychiatrist, everything. I've maintained it. I've had work in a corporate executive position, and I've learned how to deal with this illness, which is, you know, I'm bipolar one with psychotic features. It's not an easy one to deal with, but I have, and it is all because I got stopped in my tracks, and I'm so grateful. And can you just share, you know, after, I guess it was about a year past my release date, you know, that you guys all kind of slowly let me back in, you know, after I'd kind of proven myself. Can you kind of just share in a nutshell how I've been for these past 7 years?
Well, I really think it's almost a miracle. Not only the help of a great doctor that has guided you, but has also medicated you. And I know that in talking to our mother, that she saw such a difference. As she used to tell me, I think we've got our girl back. And that brought great joy to her, because we always loved you. That was never an issue. We just didn't try. And I think it's a background of a family not understanding what it is we're supposed to do. We can give you love, we can give you support, but we now saw you blossom, if you will, a late blossom, later blossom, but you came back into your own, and you have been increasingly stable, loving, supportive, very very much a part of all of our lives, and of course, at the tail end of our mother's life. So I really applaud your strength in seeing doctors that could help you, that guided you in this illness that none of us had. You know, in my sobriety of 33 years, I know that I've had challenges, and I know that I've had demons that come up. And I think you've met your demons and you've understood what it is to deal with this illness. And it is something that I really, I love you. I support your ups and downs. And I think we're on a very even keel now in our relationship and in our lives.
Thank you. And most importantly, thank you and your husband, Neil, because you guys have weathered some pretty hard storms, as did Mom. And I treasure those last 3 years with Mom when I had repaired things and we were so close again. And I saw her being proud of me again. And it's a newfound confidence that I've had and a security, even though, you know, now I've got not only mental illness, but I've got incarceration, and it's been a tough one. But you guys have remained steadfast, and I'm so grateful. I have one last question for you, and you know, it's a two-parter, and it's directed toward my audience because I really want to put an emphasis on that last segment about positivity, about repair, rebuilding, and you know, just maintaining and having happiness. And you know, I wouldn't say success. I'm not a rich person, but you know, having stability. And as a family member who has a sister with bipolar disorder, if you could give just a couple things that you've had to kind of change that have improved how we relate, even, you know, I'm talking while I'm medicated.
I can. So I think that one thing that comes right to mind is that you are a lot more sensitive, and you think on things and you a lot more, and you take it to heart a lot quicker. So not that I'm guarded in what I say, but I'm more thoughtful in what I would say to you. And it's made me a better person for understanding your illness. And I think that it is sometimes challenging because for me, it is something that you've made me to understand and to learn about the illness. And so it's a little bit more comfortable for me to understand it. And in that, there are challenges, I have to say, because you do go off the deep end, but not as much. And I know that to keep you refocused is something that I have learned to master and to also understand. So it's challenging. It is nothing that any loving family can't get through, and be supportive, and just know that not every day is going to be a perfect day, and not that life is perfect. It's a challenge. It's a working process. And I think that that's how I look at your illness, as it's a living document. It's a work in progress, and it is supported by our family who loves you, supports you, and is proud of you.
Thank you. You know what? That right there, I mean, I have to say, I did it for me because I had to at first, but the joy I get in hearing from all of you is beyond words. And so thank you, thank you, thank you.